the end sum as well. But I will revise it after some time. I'm not very sure about how this is going to work. So in today's session, what we're going to do is, so we have reached up to Alexandria last time, but now we're going to make a big leap. We're going to make a big leap because of several reasons. First, not much has happened after that, or even though a lot of it has happened after that, it has been usually a commentary of what has happened so far. For example, the books that were lost in fire and some of the books that have been taken away from Alexandria have gone to Egypt, Syria and so many other places, and finally they travelled and landed in Arabia. So that's in the West Asia that most of the developments happen. And in the West Asia, what people did, of course, is that not only that they read, they also used to write commentaries about them and kept on. So they kept the tradition alive, the intellectual tradition alive. So, and they used to have a lot of centers of learning throughout Arab countries. So they just made sure that that particular knowledge was not lost. So, and then it was only after, in the middle of 11th century, that this, all these works were first translated to Latin back. So, and that also happened mostly through the efforts of the Arabian scholars who used to travel to both the places, and also some of the mathematicians from Europe who traveled to Arabian countries and translated them back to Latin. And I think in English they didn't appear till 13th century. So that means almost like it was such a long period that all these things were there. And then they are translated back to Greek. So today's versions of what you see are basically reconstructions from the lost manuscripts. So like because of that, we don't know exactly what happened at that period. Whether we were reading commentaries or we are reading the originals. We have no idea, but very likely we are reading the originals in the sense that they have kept a lot of details in those days. Like, you know, nowadays when you copy a book, you know, you can either photocopy it or somewhere. But in those days, the manuscripts were written by hand and there were numbers for the pages or for the rolls. And then when you wrote a new copy of that, they used to keep in the margins, see from what point to what point was in the original on what page. So those page numbers were still there. So that gives the authenticity of these things quite a bit. Anyway, that apart, I mentioned about the leap that is taking place. And we are going to take a jump starting from that to almost we land very close to, you know, 16th century, late 16th century, early 17th century. But before we do that, we need to do a sort of a discussion such that we are prepared for understanding the later part of achievements in history of science. Now, what does that preparation mean? The preparation means actually asking very fundamental question of what is science, such that we know that something happened. Like when we are doing it, we are not doing all the history of ideas, right? There are so many things that happened. We are not covering all of them. But then when we selected, we had certain things in mind. So what were those things in mind which made us to select only those episodes and not the rest? How do you determine that? So it would require for you to understand exactly what you think is science. Because otherwise, you may possibly be wondering about so many other events that happened in the past and you would be wondering why they were not covered, let us say, in the course, or why they were not found in the history of science books and so on. One of the first points that we discussed very early on was the discussion about that anything to do with mythology will not be covered, right? So that apart, I mean, there are so many things that we have exempted even though they are known to be not mythology. So there must be some reason for that. So how do we determine what is science? And all of you have been doing science for now few years, okay? Now you have completed your school in science and now you are doing a bachelor degree in science, so I assume that you already know a little bit of science. But do you know how to characterize science? Can you give the how do you distinguish science? The only thing I will tell is that science is a body of knowledge, which I think all of you would agree. You would agree? Science is a body of knowledge. So we'll start with the minimum premise that science is a body of knowledge. But that's not enough, because lots of bodies of knowledge exist which are not science. So how do you make a distinction? Okay. So tell me its properties. Anything else? Regress. Yeah. Let's not worry about what it means.
Rigorous.
You said rigorous.
Okay.
That's why I was wondering. Okay. Okay. Rigorous. Anything else?
Creative.
Poetry is also creative. Salman Rushdie is as creative. So you want to call Salman Rushdie a scientist? What happens if I have a heart transplant?
Logical, science must be logical. First condition, na? Logical and creative, both simultaneously.
Okay. So,
in poetry, there is no logic. Poetry is no logic, sir.
Poetry is no logic.
Because it comes from mind, sir.
So, poetry comes from the mind?
No, sir. Science. Logical.
Science comes from the mind. Okay.
That's why it is logical.
So, should I write source from the mind? No, come on, don't worry. Any other suggestions? Anything missing?
Comes from observations.
Anything else? I mean, obviously, those things that are not covered already. Reproducible, rigorous. Rigorous spelling is wrong. So you want to call anything logical science? No? There are a lot of things that can be quite logical and cannot be called science. Okay, we'll be looking at some of these features. That's part of the first lecture. But there's something that is missing actually. which I won't tell you right now. I'll wait. If any of you think about it, you can tell me a little later. All right. We also have to see there are some of them which are very, very important. I agree that all of them are really very, very interesting features. Some of them may not be sufficient condition to call it science, but all of them are necessary for science. That I think all of us agree. But there are still certain other necessary things which are missing. It's obvious that they're missing because there's something interesting about that property which most of the people neglect, which we'll be talking about it a little later. Now let's talk about each of them in the order in which it has come through in this class. Pardon? Simple things. I will put it as simplicity.
Knowing more and more about less and less.
Knowing more and more about less and less. That's poetry, man. That's not science. No, you tell me what you mean by that. I'll put it there also.
About something very less. We go inside.
But people have to go outside. No,
we want more and more about something. Say self.
So you want to know more about less, no, in the sense that we want to go deep into a very small thing.
Yes.
That means we are basically hair splitters. So we just take a thin split of air and then keep on digging into this. This is what is called splitting the hair. Well, I consider that as well. That is, so what you are essentially saying is that I write it in a different way. Digging deep. So it's possibly what he meant by that. That means, analyze it as far as you can. Go deep into it. So, anything else?
Part-wise, think about part-wise, not at a whole body.
Okay, so what you're saying is that or analysis of the parts or whatever. I'm not getting the correct word right now, but we can. So that's also an important character. So we'll add. So let's add. Let's keep adding. Anything else that you want to come? Anytime when you during the class, if you think of something suddenly while you are talking, so just raise your hand and then we'll put it here. All right. So let's take a lot of these issues and try to see how much does these things actually characterize the science that we know and also the knowledge that we don't accept. Take something called logical. Now, how do you, what is logical? What does logic tell you? What does logic tell you? Okay, I'll give you a nice argument. So the argument is something like this. All donkeys are wise. That is the first proposition. All right? Nagarjuna is a donkey. Okay? Okay. Therefore? Nagarjuna is wise. So I have proven that I am wise. Okay, so that's the conclusion here. What a nice way to prove my wiseness. In fact, if you look at all the proofs that have been given about the proof of existence of God, they're all like this. What does it mean? But this is valid logic. Why is this valid logic? Because given the proposition, all donkeys are wise, that is, if all donkeys are wise is true, if Nagarjuna is a donkey is true, therefore the conclusion is necessary. Given two propositions, you deduce other two propositions, and that is logic. In the logic, the premises are known to be true. Premises means here the propositions that you hold to be true are called the premises. So in an argument you have premises. So given this proposition is true, given this proposition is also true, then the whatever follows from that is must be following from logic. That is, the rules of logic will tell you how, what it is. So given this rule, this follows. Now, all that essentially means is all donkeys are wise, essentially would mean what? That there is a set of wise, there is a class of wiseness, there is a class of wise elements, of which donkey is a subset. That's what this one says. This one actually says that all donkeys are wise, essentially means that the set of donkey is part of the set of wiseness. Wise things. So these are wise things, these are donkey things. And now that is what the first proposition says. The second proposition says that Nagarjuna is an element of the class donkey. And therefore it follows that Nagarjuna is wise. This is a perfectly valid reason. Is it science? So is science after such statements?
Sir, science involves logic, but all logical things are false.
However, so what is more important then? Therefore, you have to reduce. Let me, having said this, let me give you a very important distinction that you must always keep in mind. Truth and validity are two different things. What is valid is not true. But most people do not know this, and therefore they all believe the logical argument that people will give you, such as, for example, something like this: anything complex must be made by somebody. Okay, if you have something complex, it must be made by somebody. Like, for example, such as a watch, such as a building, okay, such as a temple. Okay, things are complex and that must be made by somebody. Human beings are complex. Living organisms are complex. So they must be made by somebody. And the person who made them is the God. So the God, the proof of God is proven. Now, the problem here is that you assume that the first proposition is correct. That means anything that is complex must be made by somebody. There must be some agent. So only agents can produce complexity. Complexity cannot arise on its own. So that was the first assumption. So the first assumption, if it is right, then it is also true that God must have made this world. So such things are very common and very widely used in all kinds of people. A lot of people argue like that in regular life. So that is the reason why we have to make a distinction between what is true and what is valid. So this is a perfectly valid reason, but the statements are not true. Then how do you know the statement whether it's true or not? We can do observations, we can do experiment, we can also think about reproducibility of that of the observation, whether it is, you know, possible and things like that. So that is also the thing. So the logical character is necessary for science. That means the scientific argument are required to be logical. They are supposed to be valid, but that doesn't satisfy that it is science. So that is one of the things that you have to keep in mind. All right. So let us agree that there is a set of all valid knowledge. So science is inside it or outside it? Inside. So in that sense, so do you all agree now? that let's say there is a set of so you have demarcated something like this. So of this, this is a set of valid knowledge, and this is possibly science. The entire thing is not science, that we all agree, but we don't know on what criteria we are going to cut this. So we need still more criteria out there. In a sense, logic already takes care of being systematic, because logic is anyway systematic. So being logical and being systematic is a kind of redundancy there. So we can even assume that systematic would mean what, essentially? You know, place things in order, you know, organize them nicely. That is, don't confuse with things. Okay, let there be no clear clarification. That means that if there are things which are called plants, let them be plants. Don't confuse them with animals. Okay, if there are things that are moving, don't confuse them with non-moving things. Things like that. So that's the kind of systematic character that we are talking about. Okay, then what about experimental? What do you mean by experimental? What do you mean by experimental?
You can perform experiments.
Pardon?
Perform experiments to
verify. I'm asking you, what is an experiment? So you can't use the word experiment in your answer. Always remember, whenever a question is asked, you can't use that very phrase to reply. So you have to use words which doesn't use the term experiment to explain me what is an experiment, and don't use a synonym for experiment as well.
If any phenomena or any event is happening, make a replica of that and use the same replica.
So what you're saying is that in an experiment, what we do is we reproduce phenomena. Is what you're saying?
Or we also sometimes verify the.
Okay, so either you reproduce a phenomena or you say an experiment will also verify something. Okay, anything else? Like suppose I say that, you know, there is an elephant in the next room. Okay, so you go to the other room and verify whether elephant existed or not. Do you call that an experiment? But it's still a verification. So verification doesn't tell that it's an experiment. Now reproduction of phenomena. Okay, take for example, I tell you that, let's say I want to drink a cup of tea. Okay, I know how to produce tea again. So how will I produce again? Take some water, take some milk, okay, put it all together, add some patti, and I get tea again. So is that an experiment? I have reproduced the phenomena called tea. Or I reproduce the phenomena called boiling water, let's say. Okay, boiling water requires heat. Then I have produced heat and then water boil. Therefore, boiling is a reproducible phenomenon. I know the conditions under which boiling happens. So is boiling an experiment? Is boiling an experiment?
It depends on how we observe. We can.
That is myth or with our specs.
Actually, boiling. If we are analyzing what is happening when water is boiling, then that will be an experiment. But otherwise, if it is boiling and just we are. If we have to analyze.
You're coming to the point, but you're not quite there.
There's a difference between performing a practical and experiment. We draw conclusions in experiment.
Right. Now, why is it that my mom in the kitchen is not a scientist?
There we know what
she reproduces the same phenomena every time.
She may not understand what is happening inside me. what is happening there. What phenomenon is taking place?
Pardon?
Nobody is thinking about it.
No one is thinking about it.
Yes.
Oh, what do you mean? I mean, don't tell me that my mom is a robot. She was quite intelligent.
Among many phenomena happening, we concentrate on particular phenomena in the world and observe what that phenomena takes
place. So, experiment has its own purpose. If you want to study some phenomena, means experiment is reproducing a phenomena, then analyzing it for a purpose.
Reproducing, analyzing is not enough. Some very important character of an experiment is missing. Thinking, okay. I mean, I am thinking, sitting in my room, I'll put off the lights, around. I'm doing an experiment. Well, actually, we'll come to such experiments later, but then it's possible to do such experiments. Conclude something. There is some very interesting character of that will distinguish an activity from an experiment. Something very important.
To experiment, we can establish some relation.
You can think of experiments that you do in your lab and see that something that you do there is not really, is a kind of an activity. Though, there is something that makes it an experiment.
So we first think what is going to happen. Yes.
All right, so I grant that, which essentially means that there must be some design. There must be some design, there must be some plan. That I would consider design and planning are synonyms. Okay, a plan is a design is a plan. Alright. Okay, so there must be some design, there must be some plan. Granted. But I'm still not happy.
So then we'll proceed according to the design.
What? There's something interesting about the design. Every design is not an experiment. Taj Mahal also had a design when it was built. I also made a design the other day for how my lab should be 20 years from now. That's not an experiment. Every design is not an experiment. There is something interesting inside the design that makes it an experiment. You might have heard experimental design. What is it? So you are all doing science without knowing it. I told you one interesting character about science. You have to have explicit awareness of what you are doing. If you are not, then you are not doing science. You should know why you are doing it. You should know how you are doing it. So a lot of scientists are actually not scientists according to my criteria. So I don't want to give it up just because of that. I mean, for me, a science is not what is done in TIFR. Science is not what is done in science labs. My criteria are much more rigorous, I should say. So, think about it. There are a lot of activities. And a lot of activities can also be designed. Take for example, I want to go to just say VT. I can design my plan, how I should want to go. Should I go by road, or should I go by walk, or should I take a cab, or should I take a cycle, or should I pile on somebody? And I can have all kinds of plans. But all of them actually are nothing but designs, but they are not experiments. So what do you mean by an experiment? You should already know about the final result, then why conduct the experiment?
No, we don't know about the
final. We don't know about the final experiment. Well, sometimes experiments you already know and you wanted to confirm. Well, we'll keep that. We'll keep that also as one of the things. Like, okay, you want to find out what is the outcome. Okay, you want to do something because you wanted to know what will be the outcome. Okay, it's a nice way of setting some goal. So that means there is a goal for your experiment. So you did that experiment expecting some, you had some expectations. Okay, so that's why you designed it in that way. In fact, it is the expectation that helps you to design in that way. And still you are not there. I'm not happy. Unique? Well, lots of things that are unique are not experiments.
What we conclude from outcome?
What we conclude from outcome, that is like you're talking about some reason. So that conclusion is logical, right? So that we have already taken care of. Conclusion should be reasonable, should be rational, should be logical, and that is part of the logic.
Suppose we are doing experiment. We have some desire that this result is going to come, but that has not come.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the reason of that?
Oh, but that you still have to investigate. That is still an open problem.
You
want to know, but would that make it an experiment?
What is that?
Okay, now I'll put it in a different way. Is it possible for me to do an experiment in the kitchen?
Yes.
So now, what is it that you have to do in order that the kitchen becomes a lab? What is it? That's what I'm asking. Make it explicit.
Whatever we do,
take it out of your head. It's inside it.
Whatever.
Open your box.
Whatever we do, so we should think what is the physical source behind what is
it. That's basically a curiosity, right? Okay, so I get into kitchen, become curious. So I can't say that I'm doing experiments now. Even if, for example, suddenly my mom thinks that, okay, I've been every day adding only salt to this dish, let me add a pinch of sugar now, let me see how it happens. Does it make my mom a scientist? It'll make her a good cook, no doubt.
But that process is experiment. That she is applying, that is experiment.
I'm saying I'm not happy with that.
Sir, there are even experiments.
There are experiments with food also, but I would not call them experiments till I have some criteria in mind. So what is it that I have in my mind is what you have to tell me. Until you reach that thing, I am not going to be happy. Mujhe kuch karo. You have to make me happy. Come on, man. Think about it.
The purpose behind
why we do that. That is already been stated. That there is a goal, there is an outcome, there is a design. All that comes in the design and outcome. So outcome, we already have some expected outcome. Yes? Give up?
So from that experiment we can design another one. Whatever we did after that, taking some conclusion.
Well, I make my chai and then I go for cooking rice. Well, how does that make it an experiment?
Something, sir, knowledge we are getting from that and that we will utilize for other purpose or other.
Everybody, builds up, grows on the past experience. So just building on past experience doesn't mean that I am doing an experiment. Even cats build on past experience. Okay, suppose every day you frighten a cat, next time it won't even come to you. It will recognize you. It will say, and so therefore you want to say that a cat is doing an experiment. Experimenting from something that is crucial about experiment you're missing.
We can record an episode from history, for example, Michael Sandel.
Yeah, maybe. You think of any experiments. Think of some experiments, so he's giving you a clue. The great experiment. So many things we are going to do. In fact, a lot of our course is always going to be an experiment.
It involves critical thinking.
Critical thinking, well, we have accepted that critical thinking is part of science. So let us make it. I'm still not happy. An activity which is critical, which involves critical thinking, I don't want to call it an experiment. An experiment can be very simple. If you say, give up, I am going to tell you. Give up? Hands up? Alright. So now I am going to tell you. The most important thing is, I still don't want to tell you. Well, I will use a different word. So, I have put the clue there. What is that?
Computer.
Compute.
Conclusion.
So now that I have put conclusion, now you are ready for conclusion. Conclusion, the logic may be had, conclusion outcome already may have. Contradiction. So I do anything contradictory, then I am doing an experiment.
Contribute.
Come on, man. Come on. I will now write something, then everybody will get it. What is this? You do it in every experiment. That is not the controversial experiment. Right. So we have to have a control in an experiment. You already said that before.
We are looking at the particular phenomena, means we are controlling that phenomenon.
No, not that, not necessarily. Like I'm looking at a phenomena, I'm not controlling it. I'm watching, for example, how the rain is happening every day. I'm not controlling rain. I'm meticulously observing how the seeds are germinating every day. I'm not doing any experiment there. Is it, now the question therefore is, suppose if I'm a meticulous observer, I go every day with a big telescope, okay, something like, you know, 2 meter telescope or something like that. Okay, I claim that I have the best telescope and I keep observing. Is it an experiment? That's not an experiment. So we have to be very clear about what is experiment.
Sir, if we have got a remaker replica, that is not controlled. We are making a replica.
Certainly not. That's not control. So control actually means what? What is the meaning of a control? Now let's understand what is the meaning of a control.
We can control the parameters. Which are involved in that observation.
Take for example, think about making chai.
Yeah.
Now, can you convert chai into an experiment?
Yes, sir. We can add different amounts of sugar and see how different
amounts of chai protein is. In which case, what you have to do is other things have to be kept constant.
Yes.
And that's control.
We vary.
So you vary one parameter, maybe two parameters, but you keep certain other thing constant. If you don't do that, don't call anything an experiment. Okay, this is the characteristic feature of an experiment. And you can actually do a lot of activities of that kind, and that you can do both in thought as well as in action. Sometimes you can do that kind of thinking even in thought. I would call even that an experiment. And they are of course called thought experiments. In fact, you will later on see that the best inventions in science have actually happened because of thought experiments. I would actually say almost all science is based on thought experiments.
How you control
Yeah, you have to control. We'll come to some of those examples a little later.
There is thoughts, you can control.
You can control, yeah, but thoughts also go very wide.
Yes, sir.
Uncontrolled thoughts. So every thought is not an experiment. Anyway, so now you understood. Do you agree? That's something like it's a necessary condition for something to become. So some activity is called an experiment. So that means experiment is first of all an activity that you already know. But which activity can be called sense? If there is a control, then you would call it an experiment. Otherwise, you don't call it an experiment. But still, you may not want to call it a scientific experiment. That's a different thing. For scientific experiment, you have to have certain other features as well. So I'm not giving you still a sufficient criteria, but I'm just giving you something that you should never, never miss when you want to say something is an experiment. So you have some idea about what an experiment is. Okay. Now reproducibility has been talked about number of times. Now what does it mean? That means science should not be talking about phenomena that cannot be reproduced. Do you all agree? How many times did Big Bang occur? So therefore Big Bang is not science, because any phenomena that can't occur again cannot be science. You can't reproduce Big Bang again. So what is then Big Bang? Big Bang may occur again and again.
There are
some theories. Fine, whatever it is. But then we know that, you know, there are theories who say that, you know, it must have happened only once. Suppose if there is something that happens only once in the world, would that be counted as a phenomena that the scientists can deal with it? We're not talking about the issue that, you know, every event is unique and therefore every event is separate. We are not getting into that. We are talking about general events. You are saying something?
If there is proof of that event
occurred. If there is some proof of that event occurred, and that, of course, but the point is that it is to obtain the proof that you do the experiment.
Sir,
and therefore you want to reproduce that phenomena by doing that, performing that experiment.
Sir, this means phenomena means the scientific experimental observations are reproducible, not the phenomena reproducible.
Then is that phenomena actually happening?
Sir, actually we can still reproduce. It means here in this case reproducing the experiment would, or the observation would mean that we draw, means we write equations newly and then we still again arrive to the same conclusion. Then that would be called the reproducing the same
theory. Actually, there are some phenomena which has mathematical explanation but not physical. So,
yes.
But they are also considered as part.
Yeah, I don't mind considering. As I said, thought experiments are experiments in my case. So you can do experiments in maths on piece of paper also.
Yes, sir.
I don't
reproduce.
No, but what are you reproducing?
We are reproducing the
You're reproducing some results. So results are reproducible.
Yes, yes.
But sometimes the assumptions are not reproduced. Okay, what you actually do is, let's assume that there a Big Bang took place. And you assume the conditions under which Big Bang takes place. And then if Big Bang would have occurred, okay, this and this and this must be seen. Now you predict the existence of a few other phenomena if Big Bang happens. So according to your theory, you predict these examples. Now if you find these things, either experimentally or observationally or otherwise, then you would say that now I have a very strong reason to believe that the Big Bang must have happened. So this is the interesting way of, and this particular kind of reason is called
neither deductive nor inductive, and this reason is called abductive reason.
Why is abductive reason? Is that this is abductive because if you don't assume that, you can't explain this. So that is assumed because this can't be explained without assuming that. Are you getting what I'm saying? I'm just putting it very, very metaphorically. So all that I'm saying is that if I don't assume Big Bang, then whatever is happening in the world is not explainable. It will be explained only if I assume the truth of that happening. You have never seen it. That's not observable. So everything in the premise of your argument need not be observed. The conclusions are required to be observed. The results must be observed. So the theoretical framework need not be observed. So what you do is, okay, I will assume this particular assumptions. Okay, I will not be able to explain all of the facts that are happening in this world unless I assume that, and that is what we call theoretical exercise. So all the theoretical physics or whatever theory, wherever you do, is all like that. For example, take evolution. Did anybody see evolution? Just as Big Bang, for example, the evolution, nobody has seen evolution happening. But then every biologist, you know, believes in it. Because, you know, I mean, it is always said that if you don't assume evolution, biology doesn't make sense. We make sense of evolution only if you accept evolution as what has happened. Otherwise, most of the biology is basically a series of facts. You can't put them all together unless you assume evolution. But evolution has not been seen. So the hypothesis that evolution must have happened is only because all these facts that are happening actually give you that kind of thing. So these are all called abductive kind of reasoning. So abduction is allowed in science, and it is done very, very commonly. We'll come to a little later about something that is missing again in all of them. I am not still happy because this is not a complete list of the characteristics of science. So for experiments, I have bothered you, and finally I made myself happy. And let's see if you can come out with still the last important point. Okay, so let's clear that for a while. What do you mean by rigor? Well, we know how to use the term rigor, but what do you mean by rigor? Having an argument which is also valid is not enough to make it rigorous. Okay, one of the most important thing that is in meaning of a rigor means all the statements that you utter, or every word that you utter, should be defined. Okay, if you use a term which we all don't agree, then that's not rigorous. So we should use terms which all of us have. That means there must be definitions for everything that we are using. So all that, what does it mean? So to give a definition of everything that we are using actually means that you have to make it explicit. That is, all the meaning are explicit. If all the meaning is explicit, you call it rigorous. So that's the meaning about what rigorous is. And so this is also one of the most important criteria. In fact, I would put on some criteria stars, which means essentially that if somebody is a scientist and he has not been sufficiently rigorous, then you can actually dismiss it as nonsense. So you should make sure that, you know, rigor is very important. Of course, it's not a kind of an objective criteria. You can always make it, you know, how much rigorous someone can be and how less rigorous someone can be. I mean, you can always have some kind of degree of rigor. Of course, reproducibility is also very important. So we'll put a star for this as well. We can put experimental. We can put a star, but put a doubt here, because certain things actually cannot be done experimentally because of the very nature of the facts, because everything cannot be done in experimentally, because there are some places where you don't get a place to stand, then how can you lift the earth? Like, for example, Archimedes said that give me a place to stand, I will be able to lift the earth. But that experiment nobody could do. So you just have to do that experiment only in thought. So that's why I've just put experimental kind of a question mark. Doesn't mean that it's not experimental, but it's very important kind of thing. logical and systematic way explained, but I won't make it as important as that, because there are so many things that can be systematic, there can be so many things that are logical, but still you may not want to call them really, really scientific. So I've given 3 stars here. What about creativity? Well, it's there. So many other things are also creative. Therefore, I won't want to give a special star to creativity. We'll just pass it. Well, we'll say, well, creativity is important. But we'll have to still have to be rigorous enough to say what is the kind of creativity that we need in science. That we still have to say. If we don't say that, then we are not doing any rigorous job even in this class. So we have to do that a little later. What about observations? Well, every Tom, Dick and Harry does observations. That doesn't make him a scientist.
Sir, but the scientist should be a
good. Well, observations are very important.
Yes.
But from observations, what do you get out of it? They're not sufficient. Observations are not sufficient. And sometimes, even without observations, you can still become a scientist. So we'll have to. And what about did anybody say simplicity? You said simplicity.
Sir.
Okay.
Some branches of science truly depend, whole entirely depend on observation.
Such as?
Like we can say astronomy also. It is much of it is through observation.
Then I would say astronomy is not science. They do observations, but with a lot of theory.
Yes, sir, but
if there is no theory and only observations are there, it won't call it really science. They do observations and they just don't arbitrarily just observe. They not only just observe arbitrarily, they actually look for phenomena. And they wait for the phenomena to happen. They know that phenomena is going to come. And they keep waiting in that particular degree. They point the telescope to that degree and keep waiting. And they know exactly when it's going to come as well sometimes.
That's observation,
but then that's not a simple observation.
Astrology is also observation, but it's not science.
So that's another issue. So what about astrology? Why is it not astrology? How can you dismiss that astrology is not science based on this criteria?
Yes, not reproducible.
Not reproducible. Okay. Isn't it systematic?
It is.
Is it logical? It can be logical. So only this is not there. What about rigor? There is no rigor. What about creativity?
Yes.
Plenty of it. That could be one reason why creativity is not a sufficient reason for you to be for science. Observation?
Plenty of
it. There's good enough, plenty of reason. I mean, as soon as you see, they start reading your face. Simplicity?
Very complex.
Astrology is very complex. Alright, so what is so simple about science? Or is it simple? So every Tom, Dick and Harry to learn it. What is so simple about science? I mean, is it really simple? Or you're making it simple?
No, means whatever things which are being that constructed the science, they are generally made from very simple observations, simple things only that are happening. It's not that it's very complex processes going on and we think about this. It's very simple that it in the nature and we observe and then we
derive. Mm-hmm. No, I'm still not happy because I'm looking for some very simple answer to simplicity.
It is fundamental.
Is it fundamental what?
Science.
No, maybe there is some relationship between being fundamental and being simple.
Scientists give very simple arguments to what they observe.
No, but if that is the reason, then it shouldn't be difficult for people to learn science. How much percent of people actually know a little bit of science? What should be the percent of people who know science in the whole world? What's the population of the world? 7 billion. So out of 7 billion, so how much percent of people know a little bit of science? Everybody knows a little bit, so 100% scientists?
Less than 1%? Yes, very few.
Very few. Very few is not rigorous enough. Very few can be very few. Right? Really? And very few can be very large as well.
Yes.
So make it, so he said something like 1%. He doesn't even say 1%, he says less than 1%. Okay. Now that's the interesting thing about astrology also here. Suppose if I say it is less than 20%. I'm right. Less than 1% is also right. Provided, you know, you put that margin out there. So it should be very clear. I mean, even if I say, you know, it's less than 50%, then that's also correct. Less than 1% is also correct, less than 50% is also correct. Well, anyway, see, that's the whole exercise. Now, why are we discussing this whole thing? This will also tell us, okay, how much do we know? Or how many people actually know what it is? Now, how do you draw this demarcation? Now, this demarcation requires, first you should have a criteria of what is science. Suppose if you don't know what is science, how are you going to say, oh, you know, how much percent of the people know science and how much percent of the people don't know science? There must be some, what is called? Cut-off line. Right? What is the cut-off line? How do you know that? So that cut-off line is what we are trying to define right now. We'll take just a few minutes to find out. Now, the simplicity is something that we haven't arrived at as yet. Let's arrive at what does it mean to be simple. We have given already some examples of that in the last lectures. If you recall something like that, then you will see there are a lot of examples of what that simplicity would mean. So it is something closer to this. You know, when you are talking about a part, you know, you try to understand the world in terms of something that is inside. That is using part as an explanation of the whole. Okay, that necessarily need not be a characteristic feature of science. But then what you are doing is, when you are looking for that kind of a part, you assume that must be a very simple part. Something very simple. So simple and complex. So so what do you mean by complex? The whole is complex. What is the simple thing? The bricks. So the bricks are supposed to be simpler than the building. Do you agree? So which means the part is supposed to be simpler than the whole. So that's the idea here. So that means whatever is the ultimate component of the world, and that ultimate thing is supposed to be simple. So you want to construct the world out of very simple things. And also usually some of them sometimes also have very simple ideas to construct the whole world. So you start with something very simple and you talk about it. So these are some of the things, but then I'm still not happy. So should I give you 10 minutes break to make me happy? Okay, so I'll give you 10 minutes break. You have to make me happy after the class. I'm still not happy. Something very, very interesting should still yet to come as a characteristic feature of what science is. I'm not happy with any of these features. I like some of them, that's why I put stars. Some of them I just pass. Okay, I'll put that as well. Grant you that as well. I'm still not happy. So, 10 minutes break and we'll come back and you will make me happy.
Okay.